yourselves.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
How would a race versus Harris versus Trump look like? And do you think that Harris could actually win?
Well, first of all, it's going to be ugly. Incredible racism, sexism, and misogyny has been thrown at Harris all along.
She won't be backing down from any of those sexist and racist, disgusting statements that will be, we are anticipating coming from the right.
Yeah, well, America's left wing clearly has its talking points down pat. They've decided that any criticism of Kamala Harris has to do with racism or sexism or both. Now, that's a convenient excuse for anybody running for public office to say, you can't say anything bad about me. You can't question my background. You can't question my actions or my policies or my voting record, because anything that criticizes me amounts to racism or sexism or both. Have we all got that clear? Guess what? We're not going to go by those rules. As far as I'm concerned, it's perfectly legitimate to question the past voting record in the United States Senate and her past actions as California Attorney General and San Francisco DA, and also her positions on the issues, which are nothing but bizarre. But let me get into the details on that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take your phone calls and your emails. If you want to jump in to what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, well, we're going to put you right to the front of the line at 866-439-5277, as long as you stick around for a few questions from me, because I'd like to point out maybe some of my objections to your argument. You can also weigh in by voting in our X poll, and here's the question, because it is being talked about. I sat and I watched Joe Biden's swan song last night. It didn't exactly explain why he's dropping out of the race for president. A lot of us think it's because he's mentally incapacitated. He certainly didn't admit to that. It sounded more like a campaign speech, but there's been some speculation that maybe artificial intelligence was involved. As he addressed, he suddenly lost his stutter, and he was able to give a relatively coherent speech, although he did slur a few words here and there. But this would be his first coherent speech in about 4 years, although really, even if it was real, it was only reading off a teleprompter. But some people have been speculating whether or not that in-studio Joe Biden is actually real. They point out a glitchy background and Joe Biden's very orange complexion that some social media users say might have been a little bit of AI used in prepping last night's supposedly live address. And do we actually know that it was a live address? There's really no way to confirm that, is there? So do you think that artificial intelligence wrote Joe Biden's Oval Office address last night? I would say I think there was some involvement in it, but you can vote any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show on X. You'll also find it on our website at LarsLarson.com. Well, understand this, that as we go into the fall campaign, we've got just over 100 days until November the 5th, and you've already got people saying, don't say anything bad about Kamala Harris, because we will simply call you a racist or a sexist or both. It is campaign season, and the Democrat Party lost its main candidate to apparent brain failure. Its backup plan, Kamala Harris, has a horrible record, so let the lying begin. 3 years ago, Joe Biden made Kamala Harris border czar to fix the invasion of illegal aliens that now numbers at least 10 million and maybe as many as 15 million. Well, Kamala Harris failed miserably as border czar. So I kid you not, today, the mainstream legacy corporate media is telling stories in which they flatly deny that she was ever border czar, even though those same organizations called her border czar when Joe Biden named her to that position 3 years ago. Take a listen.
Quote unquote, border czar. Vice President
Harris was not a border czar.
Meantime, Vice President and border czar Kamala Harris facing some backlash.
What he said about Harris and immigration was not true. She was never appointed border czar.
And this will be her first visit to the U.S.-Mexico border region since she was appointed as the border czar by President Biden.
People are going to have to counter the misinformation. You already hear folks talking about the border czar. She wasn't the border czar.
President Biden tapped Kamala Harris, Vice President Kamala Harris, to be the border czar.
Yes, he did. And I watched the news conference where he did it. And yet today, the legacy media is so anxious to carry water for Kamala Harris that they're literally gaslighting you right to your face, saying, no, she was never the border czar. Well, in point of fact, there's no such position as czar. And yet it's come to be a term of art used to describe somebody in the government, usually the federal government, although occasionally it's used at the state level, to describe somebody who's been given a specific task. And what task was she given? She was given the task of fixing the border problems that Joe Biden had created by signing 64 executive orders right after he took office, reversing virtually everything that Donald Trump did. Well, what does that leave us? Well, one Democrat, Representative Amelia Sykes of Akron, Ohio, she even tried to deny that she knows who Kamala Harris is when a reporter asked her.
Congresswoman, do you think Kamala Harris did a good job as the border czar, yes or no?
I don't know who Kamala Harris is.
She's the vice president.
After she corrected her own pronunciation of a name that apparently she knows well. I mean, folks, this is 1984 on steroids. In the U.S. Senate, GovTrack ranked Harris as the single most liberal U.S. senator in America, even more liberal than Vermont's communist senator Bernie Sanders. So what did GovTrack do? They simply erased her Senate voting card. I kid you not. GovTrack, which is supposedly a bipartisan source of information about the voting records of House and Senate members, just erased her voting report card. I'll remind you of some of her positions on the issues. She proposed eliminating all private health insurance to force all citizens onto government health insurance programs. She backs a ban on fracking to deny America its natural gas and oil. Senator Harris co-sponsored legislation to stop deportation of illegal aliens. As vice president, she called for abolition of ICE. And there's been no shortage of Kamala Harris soundbites showing she doesn't even seem to know the issues facing America or even basic facts about a country of 335 million people.
We're looking at over 220 million Americans who just in the last several months died.
We are in the midst of a public health epidemic that has taken the lives of over 220 million Americans in just the last several months.
Now, if you had the impression that she might have sounded drunk right there, I had the same impression, so we'll have to hold that for later. During the Antifa riots 4 years ago, Harris joined the mob demanding defunding of police and raised bail money to put violent criminals back on the street. And now, again, I kid you not, she's running as the law and order candidate. And you wondered why President Donald Trump described the news media as the enemy of the people. It's absolutely nuts. Harris says we're not going back. You mean back to low inflation, cheap gas and groceries, abundant jobs, low mortgage rates, ending worthless wars, back to a non-DEI world where the Secret Service actually protects presidents and airplanes don't lose their parts mid-air? Yeah, I'd like to get back there, too. It's a pleasure to be with you on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Back in just a moment, you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The sound of freedom. Here's Lars Larson.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
nonsense. This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
If the would-be assassin at President Trump had been a Trump supporter or a right-winger, you'd never hear the end of it from the corporate legacy media. But it turns out he was a Biden supporter, which kind of makes sense. Why else would somebody try to put a bullet in Donald Trump's head? And is the mainstream media going to talk about that at all? Of course, I'm talking about the attempted assassin of President Trump, who fired the bullets that killed a man in the audience and put a hole in Donald Trump's right ear. The New York Post reporting, the gunman who tried to assassinate President Trump appears to have used the controversial alt-right favored social media platform Gab to spread messages. Gab CEO Andrew Torba says he learned yesterday that Thomas Matthew Crooks may have had an account on our platform after he got an emergency disclosure request from a law enforcement agency. That account, which is Epic Microwave, which the CEO of the company says he has been unable to confirm, definitely belonged to Crooks, posted on the site a total of 9 times. He said while the account had very few posts on the site, the majority of them were in support of President Biden. A number of posts particularly expressed support for President Biden's COVID lockdowns, border policies, and executive orders. Now, consider this. If the killer or any killer in America showed signs of ties to Donald Trump, MAGA, or even conservative principles, does the corporate news media even hesitate to trumpet that news? Glad to get to your calls in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Let me jump right to today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
State governments in Oregon and Washington, I have noticed, often act like that obnoxious little brother you may have had. Anything Cali does, the Beaver and Evergreen states immediately try to copy, except this time. An Oregon town went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court to win the right under law to use common sense and kick homeless camps off public property. Grants Pass won that case almost a month ago and has done exactly nothing with its brand new authority. Portland and other big cities have vowed that they will change nothing as well, and pretty much the same thing in Washington State. But the headline today in the New York Times reads, Newsom orders California officials to remove homeless encampments. The directive from California Governor Gavin Newsom is the nation's most sweeping response to the Supreme Court decision last month that gave local leaders greater authority to remove homeless campers. Why ask for the authority if you're not actually going to use it? And our email of the day, but you can always send more, to talk@LarsLarson.com. Jared writes in, Lars, are modern Democrats somewhat like toddlers in preschool? Would I be accurate to think that the behavior of Dems and preschoolers are often similar? When both don't get their way, they tend to throw tantrums. Both often like to cheat. I suppose the only real difference is the Democrats are allegedly adults and they should know better, signed Jared. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And let me bring on Will McKay. Will, you're a commissioner in Benton County, Washington?
Yes, sir.
Okay, what's on your mind?
Oh, I just wanted to call. I heard on the radio this morning Nancy Pelosi got interviewed, and she's like, oh, well, Trump had the worst employment record ever after he left and stuff, or before he left. And then the interviewer is like bringing up questions like, well, what about COVID? We're in the world's pandemic, and she's just denying that. And I'm just, you know, the thing is, this is my thing. I'm a conservative Republican. I grew up on a farm raising in Idaho. I'm a business owner. My opinion is that our government should be ran like a business, not making millions and millions of dollars and profiting, but staying in budget. So we're not raising stupid taxes like our horrible governor in Washington State is doing this gas tax and all these other things. I mean, that's why I ran for commissioner in 2020 when Trump was running. I didn't know what a commissioner did, but then I'm looking into it. My guy that I ran against, he's been doing it for like 20 years and not going to any board meetings. I'm like, dude, we need people to step up and run our counties, our cities, our country like a business. And when I hear
I agree.
On my county meetings, when I hear county meetings and I'll have a elected official come in and ask for a budget transfer or an employee or something, and I'm like, is it budget neutral? Oh, yeah, it's budget neutral. Okay, yes.
Well, except I wouldn't even go budget neutral. Why do you need that additional employee? And, Will, can I suggest, I didn't come up with the idea, it's been around for decades, but it's called the Yellow Pages Rule. Does your county do anything as a county government that a citizen can find in the Yellow Pages? And I even have a specific example from a county I know of. I don't know whether your county does. Does your county have a weatherization program or department?
I don't know that.
I want you to check into that. Would you check? And here's why I'm asking. There's a county I know of that has an entire department called the Weatherization Department. Now, Will, if you want to get your house weatherized, do you know how to do it? You can call up any weatherization contractor or the utility companies and say, hey, I'm interested in better windows and some insulation in the attic. And they'll say, we'll come out for free, the utility companies or the insulation contractor, and we'll give you a bid. We'll tell you how much it's going to cost and how much it's likely to save you in energy because they want your business. Now, if private companies will do that for citizens, why should a government ever do it? And I find things all the time that governments do, counties, cities, and the state, that can and are done by the private sector. If we eliminated all those things from government, think how much your budget could be cut.
Yeah, so I don't think we do that. I do know that we'll have staff or employees come ask for raises, and we're right now in a study for, you know, pay increases, like where are we at with other counties comparing and stuff. I know we do that internally, but yeah, we don't do that.
Can I suggest on that score, I'm aware governments do that, and they love to compare themselves to other government. You know what I do, Will? If you got a department that employs people, instead of comparing them to other governments, saying, are we keeping up with Tacoma? Are we keeping up with Eugene? Why don't you say, how much does the job you do, how does it compare to the private sector? If you've got somebody who drives a dump truck and delivers gravel or sand or whatever they do for the county road department, how much does that job pay in the private sector? And by the way, include those very generous health care benefits and pension benefit. And if you say, why, it appears we're overpaying you at this point because we could hire a private sector company that would do this job for a whole lot less than you. And instead of saying, well, we're not, you know, Benton County isn't as good as Spokane County or isn't as good as Lane County, why don't you have them compare themselves to the private sector? I think you're going to find the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, the Oregonian in this case, not the Seattle Times, did this about a decade ago. They looked at private sector jobs like janitor and and government jobs like janitor. And you know what? The government sector jobs routinely paid about 25% more. Now, is there any reason a janitor or anybody, a truck driver, should make more money just because he's drawing a public paycheck instead of doing the same job for a private company?
No, I agree with you 100%. And that's the thing, like, on our side, it's like, yeah, we look into that and study it. And I'm like, well, okay, I get, like, doing a, you know, a 3% pay increase or whatever. But there's some times where we'll get unions asking for a 30% increase.
Of course they do. That's what unions do. Good luck, Commissioner, and I appreciate the call. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Because you like what you hear, right? Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and always glad to welcome back our friend John Lee, aviation pilot, for a retired airline pilot, I should say, reporter, and you can John can tell you where to find his stories because they're great. Candidate for the Washington House of Representatives, District 18, and of course, very knowledgeable, the most knowledgeable when it comes to the Interstate Bridge Project, which is about a $7 to $9 billion boondoggle that most of us agree is probably never going to get built and is going to be just another gigantic waste of money without addressing that problem. John, welcome back.
Hey, Lars, thanks for having me on. The John Lee campaign just had a blast this last weekend giving out American flags at the Battleground Harvest Days Parade. Great kids, wonderful family event, just absolutely loved it.
That's so much better than going to a Democrat event and getting a free Hamas flag or something like that. Can I bring up something since you brought this up? John, you know that it's a violation of federal law to threaten the life of the president, the vice president, their family members, or any candidate for president of the United States. You know, they wrote a federal law, and even though I guess you could argue maybe it infringes on the First Amendment, but nobody seems, and I don't object to it, I think it's sensible that it's illegal to threaten the life of the president or a candidate, for a major candidate for president of the United States. You know that, right?
Absolutely.
And you know that if I ever get a caller who tries to issue one of those threats on my show, we end up dumping them in a way in which the audience doesn't hear it, because otherwise you get a visit from the Secret Service. You know who I want a visit from the Secret Service? I want Amazon to get a visit from the Secret Service, because I just saw this minutes ago right before you came on, and I thought, okay, I've got to check and see if this is true. So I looked on my own Amazon account. On Amazon right now, Amazon is allowing a retailer to sell a shirt that says the only good Trump is a dead one.
Oh, that's absolutely horrific. And they need to be tattooed for that. That's just so un-American. And yes, we believe in free speech, but shame on them for allowing that to be sold.
Well, I hope they get a visit from the Secret Service. I hope Amazon is fine, because when I saw the report a few minutes ago, I thought, well, sometimes reports are a bit delayed, and so maybe it's already been taken down. No, looked on my own account, and sure enough, you can buy that ugly shirt. And the idea that the other side has to resort to this kind of tactic to say, let's suggest harm come to anybody. I never suggest that harm come to Joe Biden, or that harm come to Kamala Harris. I don't think they're good in their jobs, but I would never wish them physical harm or any kind of demise. And yet the left does this routinely, and I find it disgusting, and especially the riots yesterday in Washington, D.C. by the Hamas types. And Kamala Harris didn't even, at least the White House came out and disparaged those riots and the destruction they did in Washington, D.C. But Kamala Harris so far hasn't said a word about it. But I want to talk to you about the bridge and find out about the latest on this boondoggle, where they've now got, what, 1.4, almost 1.5 billion from the Federal Bridge Investment Program. But doesn't that still leave them at least about $5 billion short on a project that's supposed to start construction fairly soon?
Well, my hope, my friend, is that when Donald Trump gets reelected this November, that he's going to appoint some very common sense business people who are going to go look at all the federal money being doled out and the absolute waste on the Interstate Bridge Replacement Program. And I hope they hit the stop button and say, no, we're not going to spend another penny on this until it actually provides something of value for the people. And that, of course, is saving them time and reducing traffic congestion. So back to your question, my friend. So far, two different federal programs have allocated $600 million and another $1.5 billion, total of $2.1 billion. But none of that has been spent yet. And they are hoping to get another $1 billion from the Federal Transit Administration, bringing the total to over $2.5 billion, maybe closer to $3 billion. But again, there's zero value in this entire project right now, and therefore we need to put a stop on it, stop wasting the people's money, and actually provide a project that delivers value for the people. And as you and I have talked before, the two states are building a bridge in Hood River for $520 million. If you can build a bridge for $520 million, you don't need to spend 15 times that on the Interstate 5 bridge replacement.
No, and just so I get the objection ahead of time, because somebody's sure to call in, the bridge they're building for $500 million, how long is that bridge?
Oh, it's longer than the Interstate 5 bridge replacement program. Our connection border to border is a little over 3,000 feet wide, and I think in Hood River, Rough Wag, it's 4,000 feet wide. So it's much longer, and they're actually going to build a bridge that's taller than what the IBR is proposing, which the
John,
Coast Guard is saying.
You dropped out for a moment. You said the bridge in Hood River will actually be a higher above the water than the one they're proposing to build over the Columbia on I-5.
Yes, exactly right. And, of course, the Coast Guard is fighting this current proposal at 116 feet. It's a bridge too low, another aspect of the waste of the taxpayers' money.
Well, in fact, the Coast Guard has veto power over this project. Am I overstating their authority?
Absolutely not. And again, another aspect of Trump winning the presidency is hopefully he and his administration come in and say, we expect you to enforce current very logical, sound rules that protects marine traffic on the river. And in the case of this bridge project, thank you for demanding the current 178 feet or more and stick to that demand. That is very common.
So we're talking about what, 62 feet is how much this bridge is short. That's not a small amount when it comes to getting commerce under the bridge.
Exactly right. And another sad component of this bridge is the reality that the IBR team, the bridge team, is expecting to spend most likely between 100 and 200 million of the people's money to buy off the four upriver firms in what they call mitigation. And it's using the taxpayers' money to say, don't be mad here. What is it going to take to buy your approval on this?
It's John, I realize that over the years we've been talking about this, I left one thing out of that, because they want to buy off the four current companies that do business upriver and wouldn't be able to get what they build under the new bridge. But what I've left out is we're assuming that there are only four companies, but if you build this bridge, it forever forecloses, forever, any company coming in and building and creating some, you know, a company to build things upriver of the bridge that don't fit under the bridge. So you're not just hurting the four existing companies. You're basically saying, and there will never be a company that builds oil derricks or oil equipment or any of the other things that would have to fit under that bridge to get to the customers.
Exactly right. And I mean, if you look at the history, the Kaiser shipyards did amazing things for the American military system back in World War II, building all kind of ships and things that were valued and needed. And they are precluding that by building a bridge too low.
Well, at this point, I think the project is dead. Because if the current Coast Guard is opposing it, I agree with you. I think President Trump is going to win in November. He'll be president in January. And the Coast Guard, if they continue to fight, and God bless them, we've asked them to come on. I understand they probably want to stay out of a political, political mess like this is. But at this point, they haven't changed their tune. I don't think they're going to. I think the project is dead, and they've wasted more years and more hundreds of millions of dollars on this. That's John Lee. You can find his stories at Clark County Today. We'll be back in a moment. We'll get to your phone calls and emails, and we'll talk about the Mad Max world of Northwest homeless encampments with exploding propane tanks in a public park in Seattle.
Simply by listening, you're proving how smart you really are. Lars thanks you.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I mentioned the Mad Max world of Northwest homeless encampments. There are fires breaking out in homeless encampments all over the Pacific Northwest. Oregon, Washington, East Side, West Side. And many of them they're basically acts of retribution. You know, where one homeless bum gets angry at the people who kicked him out of the homeless camp, so he goes back and sets a fire. I believe that that was the cause of one of the big fires that happened in Central Oregon. And then you had this fire that happened on Tuesday on Queen Anne Hill in Queen Anne Park, where they had multiple propane tanks exploding in the middle of the Queen Anne neighborhood of Seattle. And they say, well, you know, we haven't quite determined the cause yet, but a 64-year-old man was seen running and screaming with a shirt on fire in the area before responding officers detained him for questioning. So this one appears to be one more set fire. I've been suggesting on this show for years that these homeless encampments and what they are allowed to do presents a real clear and present danger to the people who live nearby, to firefighters, to police, and other residents of every city they're located in. and public officials, to a large extent, refuse to do anything about it. On that note, let's go to Neary in Seattle. Hey, Neary, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
I have a quick question for you. What is that newfound enthusiasm for Kamala Harris? Is that like 81 million voted for Biden counting, so they're easy to install their cheat?
I think here's the best way to understand it, Neary. There's an old joke that goes, you, if you hit yourself in the head, and somebody asks, why do you hit yourself in the head? And you say, because it feels so good when I stop. Well, we've had 4 years of Joe Biden. He's a major albatross for the Democrat Party. They realize that he's not fit to be serving right now, although they won't say that out loud. And he's certainly not fit to run for another 4 years. So the minute he takes himself out of the race, probably after he was threatened with the 25th Amendment to the Constitution, and there's an investigation going on right now to find out, was he threatened over the weekend, this past weekend, with being removed forcibly from office? And so he said, okay, I'll drop out of the race. And when they got somebody other than Joe, even though it's somebody as dumb as a bag of hammers in Kamala Harris, they suddenly said, oh, wow, we're really excited. We can vote for somebody who's not Joe. I think that's the best way to understand it. Let's go to George. Hey, George, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. This segment brought to you by 540training.com, concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense online at 540training.com. George, what's on your mind?
Hi there. I called to talk about Kamala Harris, and yep. We call her Que Mala in Espanol, and Que Mala means how awful, how bad, how evil. You can choose.
I didn't know that.
Three, they all three fit, but we call her Que Mala Harris, and we call her Que Mala primarily because she seems to think that it's somehow evil to suggest that a woman should carry her baby to term. Her idea of a good idea is that a woman should be allowed to kill her baby in her womb for any reason or no reason at all. What can we make of a woman whose campaign theme is based on the killing of innocent human babies? The only thing we can say about that is that she is bound to do pure evil if allowed.
And by the way, George, on that issue, consider the difference between the two candidates, because there are those on the left who say Donald Trump wants to ban abortion nationwide. Absolutely, provably untrue. Donald Trump says the Supreme Court sent the decision back to the states and the state should make that decision. Now, that didn't make all pro-lifers happy, but I think it's the right decision as well. And I said that before Donald Trump took that position. What has Harris said she will do? She said if she gets into office, she will ask the Congress to codify Roe v. Wade into federal law, meaning she wants the Congress to write a law that says abortion on demand in America, anywhere, anytime, for any reason, and as late term as you want to go. So contrast those two positions.
You know, Kamala Harris has no limits when it comes to abortion. Her idea of abortion is that a woman should have the right to kill, kill, and then kill some more. Gee, boys and girls, welcome to the party. The killing fest has started. We're glad you came, but not really.
No kidding. George, thanks very much for the comments. Our X poll today. Do you think that artificial intelligence wrote or created Joe Biden's Oval Office address last night? I'd vote yes on that. You can vote any way you like. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. I asked you yesterday, should the Secret Service, which failed President Trump, demand he stop his huge rallies? 95% of you voted with me and said no. Only 5% said yes. Let's go to Weldon, listening in Redmond on the Radio Northwest Network. Weldon, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, well, thank you, Lars. I have a conspiracy for you, a theory for you.
Good.
I believe the deep state did conspire to kill a president, and I believe the weapon of choice was incompetence. I think they put the most incompetent person in charge, and through DEI, she brought in more incompetent people.
Yep.
And then they just sat back and let nature take its course. And the beauty of the whole thing, it doesn't matter whether it was Trump that got killed, Kamala got killed, or Joe Biden. It all benefits the state.
President.
The deep and incompetence is in major time supply in the federal government, so they wouldn't have a tough time getting enough incompetence to make that happen. Weldon, thanks for the conspiracy theory on Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson.
Quiet, please. Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars. Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I want to talk about Project 2025. You know, I think that the mainstream legacy corporate media has pulled a fast one on conservatives because I hear not just liberals criticizing this idea, but I also hear conservatives doing it, too. And I think every time I hear somebody criticizing something, my first inclination is to say, well, exactly what is it that you're criticizing? What is the idea? And here's what it is. In its simplest form, it is a private think tank, and there are lots of them on both the left and the right in America. And this one has proposed a list of ideas that could be used under a different president than, say, Kamala Harris or Joe Biden or any liberal Democrat. The liberal Democrats hate this. And in fact, I saw one story in The Hill today, and I read the first couple of paragraphs because it was a list of things from it. And it sounded more like a laundry list of reasons to love the idea of some of these ideas that they propose. And at this point, they are only that. They're just ideas. And if you think that any president, Republican or Democrat, is short of people suggesting ideas to them, every single president gets ideas. Now, liberals tend to take liberal ideas. Conservatives tend to take conservative ideas. But I'll get into the list in a moment. First, I want to grab a couple of your calls. I don't like making people wait a long time. So let me start with Don. Hey, Don, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hello, Lars. Like I was telling your screener, you know, I'm not a real confrontational guy unless somebody really gets me ticked off. But I've been attacked because, you know, while Donald Trump is not my know-all, end-all, you know, obviously Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, the fact that Kamala is knowingly covered up for Joe, knowing the condition he was in. But, you know, I was attacked on Facebook today by a guy I knew 50-some years ago, and he basically said, well, you know, he's a convicted rapist, he's a convicted felon, he's, you know, he's insane, you know, proven insane. And I said, then, you know what, post all of your information and where you're getting it from, and I want to see the documented proof that it says Donald Trump.
Well, I can tell you the rape issue is absolutely wrong. Now, there is a woman who won a civil case against Donald Trump that he allegedly molested her, that he had sex with her, that he grabbed her in ways he shouldn't have. Now, she says it happened. He says it didn't. It happened 30 years ago. She only raised the issue recently, and she brought a lawsuit, and at least for now, she won a big judgment. No conviction of rape, and I don't believe her story. In fact, I'd point out, the woman was unable to even remember the year when this alleged assault by Donald Trump came. She remembered roughly when it happened. And I would think if any young lady in my family said I was raped, I think she would remember the day and the year and the moment and everything else. But, you know, as to being proven insane, there's nothing out there that says Donald Trump is insane. Now, there are liberals who think his ideas are insane, but they also think, Don, that if you're a conservative, they think your ideas are insane and my ideas are insane, like having a solid border, a limited government as specified in the Constitution, low taxes, minimal government intrusion in people's lives. The liberals don't like those ideas. They hate them, and they'll call them insane. But does that help you out at all?
Well, yes, it does. You know, the one thing, too, that lady, I forget her name, but my wife, like she said, you know, that the woman's accusations mirrored I think, you know, some TV law program or something, almost like she...
Like she got it off Law and Order Criminal Intent or something, yeah.
Yeah, yes, sir.
E. Jean Carroll is her name, and she got a $5 million award last year. It's being appealed right now. And again, Don, I hate the idea that women are assaulted by men and that men are assaulted by women occasionally, not as often, and that children are assaulted by adults, and I think they ought to get justice. Do I suspect that this was not justice, but this was two things, political motivation, number one, to wait until Donald Trump became president to make the accusation, or right as he was running for president, and to want a big payday at the end of the day, a big bunch of money. And I think he's going to win his appeal, and that'll be the end of that. But you should expect these attacks and just be able to answer them coherently and sensibly. You know, don't get mad at people. Just say, well, what you're telling me isn't true. And if you want me to tell you why, I'll be glad to tell you. That's what I do with people.
Okay, yeah, well, you know, I mean, I get my information all over the place. And I said, then name your sources.
Yeah.
And then I get the same response at every time. Well, you know what, why should I do the work for you?
Well, and not only that, Don, but I always caution people. Like, I mentioned that Amazon is allowing a retailer to sell a T-shirt that says the only good Trump is a dead Trump, which I think is a violation of federal law. You can't threaten a candidate, can't threaten the president. It also might get Amazon a visit from the Secret Service. And people said, well, did you just believe that because it was on the Internet? And I said, no, I picked up my phone and I went to my Amazon account and I did a keyword search and I found the T-shirt right away. It's still up for sale as of about 10 minutes ago. So when people tell me information, I always double check. And the more outrageous the accusation, the more checking you ought to do. If somebody says it's raining outside, I guess you don't have to have, you know, written proof of it. You can just look out the window. But if somebody tells you Donald Trump's a rapist, really, can you tell me where he was accused of rape, where he was tried for rape, and where he was found guilty? As for being a felon, consider that the charges brought against him are being thrown out right and left. There were some that landed, like the fraud charge. The fraud case where he was convicted of fraud in a case in which nobody lost money, there was no victim, and the people who would have been the victims, the banks that he had borrowed money from, said not only did he pay the money back either on time or ahead of time, we'd like to do business with him again. Now, Don, have you ever heard of a fraud case in which the victim or the purported victim who lost no money said, no, he was a great customer and he did more than he was required to do in some cases, and we'd like to do business with him again?
Well, actually, something similar. 35 years ago, I got divorced, and boy, I was everything under the sun. So I know a little bit about exaggeration.
Those kind of things do happen, and I appreciate it. By the way, 2025, the headline I saw was people are angry about Project 2025, Heritage Foundation not tied to Donald Trump. And what are they saying it would bring about? Big increase in logging on public lands, an end to federal environmental enforcement on farms, work requirements if you're on food stamps, demolition of the federal farm subsidies, and they say these are the bad things about the plan. And by the way, it's an idea written up by a private group called the Heritage Foundation. They're going to suggest those ideas to Donald Trump, and he can take them or leave them. But somehow the left wants to turn Project 2025 into the newest boogeyman to scare you away from the best president of the 21st century. Back in a moment. I'll get to your calls. 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Are you?
Just think of him as your concealed carry.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails. But when I have the ear of an American congressman, I want to be able to ask him some questions that I think have been bugging a lot of people, among others, Cliff Benz. Cliff is, by the way, a Republican congressman, represents Oregon's 2nd Congressional District, newly appointed as chair of the Natural Resources Subcommittee on Water, Wildlife, and Fisheries. Congressman, welcome back.
Lars, it's great to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
I want to ask you this. There's apparently going to be an investigation of this, but do you think that the Democrat Party, the big powerful people like Pelosi and such, went to Joe Biden over the weekend and said, you either drop out of the race for reelection or we're going to invoke the 25th Amendment and drag you out by force?
Well, I don't know if they did that, but there's no doubt that the folks that control the Democrat Party have decided they want Kamala Harris, regardless of the fact that nobody has voted for her. And they've decided that she's going to be the one. When we say they, certainly we can look at those who have now chosen to endorse the vice president, even though the vice president hasn't had anybody vote for her and put her in President Biden's place. So, yeah, there was pressure, I'm sure, brought on him. I'm sure he was told that he couldn't win, and therefore they needed somebody else. And it's crazy for them to be talking about undemocratic processes, and then they grab someone, whoever this nameless, faceless they is, and make that person, Kamala Harris, the candidate. It's amazing.
I agree with you, Congressman, because this is the same bunch that accused Donald Trump of being a threat to democracy. 14 million Democrat Americans, for whatever reason, voted for Joe Biden. Nobody voted for Kamala Harris. And all of a sudden, the powers that be decide, nope, she's the candidate and you're not. And they're going to accuse Donald Trump of being the threat to democracy?
Yeah, well, it's pretty amazing when the Black Lives Matter group come out and say that they think this was a non-democratic approach. It's pretty amazing, but that's exactly what's happening. And frankly, it is a non-democratic approach. Whoever this they is, decided that Kamala is the one, and all those 14 million voters, too bad for them.
Well, and it's not something new for the Democrat Party, is it? Because there was a point where the Democrat Party realized that for whatever reason, the communist from Vermont, from the upper chamber, Bernie Sanders, was not the candidate they wanted. And Hillary was, again, figure that one out because she was a terrible candidate. And they basically kicked him to the curb. I don't know what they bribed him with to get him to shut up. But he kept his mouth shut. Hillary got the nod instead. She lost, and we got the best president of the 21st century. But this party seems to specialize in accusing everybody else of being a threat to democracy. While they're, and we're not a democracy. I know we're a republic, but we have elements of democracy, and the Democrat Party seems to not want to have to participate in honest democracy in those democratic elements. They want to just pick the person the party elites believe is the right one and kick everybody else out.
Well, and included, by the way, before we leave, Bernie Sanders, yeah. He was the only one in the Senate that was more liberal than then Senator Kamala Harris, the only one. And so if they want somebody as far to the left as you can get and not be a socialist, I guess that's Kamala Harris. But again, the emphasis should be, as you placed it, on the fact that nobody voted for her, nobody, and now all of a sudden the powers that be in the Democrat Party, except for a few notable exceptions, I haven't seen a former President Obama step up yet and say anything about it, but Nancy Pelosi certainly has, and Kamala, Nancy Pelosi's selected candidate, so I guess she has a former Speaker Pelosi's vote.
Well, and by the way, Congressman Cliff Benz is with me. Obama's withholding his endorsement, although it kind of suggests that he's just withholding it and that he might eventually give it to her. But allegedly, that's because he believes she can't win. I actually believe it's because he's got puppet strings on Joe Biden, and he wants to make sure that he can have the same level of control over whoever's in the White House, if it's Kamala Harris. And then until he gets that, he's not going to give her the endorsement. What do you think of that theory?
I think that's probably as good a theory as any, but the truth of it is I don't really know what's motivating those people. I will say that in looking at what happened just before President Biden decided to bail out, the money dried up. And so when you talk about the elitists that are driving the Democrat Party, you know, a huge part of it is the money. And when they saw that he was falling significantly behind in the swing states, behind President Trump, they were going to dump him. And the part of it had to do with the leadership of the Democrat Party, former Speaker Pelosi, and a lot of it had to do with the money going away. You saw what $100 million immediately came into Camel. And so, it's the elitist, it's the money.
Well, because right before he dropped out, we were told that $90 million was being held back, saying, we're not going to give it to you. You can't win, and maybe you're mentally deficient. And when that when she came in and they said, look, she raised $100 million. It's record setting. I thought, no, that's just the money that got held back. And it was the threat, get rid of Joe or we're not giving you the money. Oh, you got rid of Joe? Here's the money. So let me ask you this. Is she going to be able to appear on the ballot everywhere? Because I recall one of the things we talked about was the Friday after that debate debacle, Nevada said, close the business 5 o'clock Friday night. Whatever name is on the ballot is the name that stays there unless the candidate dies. Well, Joe Biden's very much alive right now, not mentally competent, but he's alive. So does his name still go on the ballot in some states like Nevada where they've already locked it in?
Well, that's a great question. I do not know the answer to it. I would just be guessing, Laura, so I'm no help to you on that one.
Okay, fair enough. So let me ask you about this. Does she have a chance of actually becoming the president of the United States? Because she seems like she's got an absolutely insane record to the point where GovTrack actually erased her voting scorecard. Did you know that?
I heard some of my staff told me that that people were trying to rebuild her history. And by the way, part of her history is that she said she wouldn't accept corporate donations. It'd be interesting to know how much of that $100 million is corporate donations. I mean, I'm serious. Someone should check into that and to see, what her excuse for that type of historical remark might be. You're right that my understanding is they're trying to rebuild her history as we speak.
Okay, and then you've got this, her record. She was for defund the police. She raised bail money for some of the violent rioters to put them back on the streets. She co-sponsored a bill that would have prevented the deportation of illegal aliens. And that's just a taste of some of the radical ideas she's been pushing. How's she gonna sell that to the American people, do you think?
Well, with the $100 million or whatever the amount of money is that people throw into the race, your question was, can she become president? Well, I hope not. But it appears to me that the Democrats are going to do their best to have her as their candidate. So we shall see. But people do need to go look at her record before it is a race. They need to see that the NRA gave her an F. They probably would have given her something lower if they could have when it comes to her position on the Second Amendment. And then, of course, she did not support the money for the wall when some of her Democrat colleagues did. Back in 2019. People need to go take a look at what she did. She also brought an environmental crime concept into play, which is an attempt to make crime out of what would normally just be a common everyday environmental violations at that. And so when you
the
see
Lars Larson Show. Things you wish you could say. More with Lars.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails. I want to deal with some of the nuts and bolts of Joe dropping out, Kamala Harris stepping in as his replacement. No voters involved whatsoever in this process until November 5th, and the Democrat Party saying, we've chosen your candidate for you. We don't have to involve the use of actual human voters or citizens of the United States. And the perfect guy to talk about that is our friend Hans von Spakovsky, who's a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Hans, welcome back to the program.
Lars, thanks for having me back.
So let's start with a simple one. Are there any states where his name's already locked into the ballot?
I don't think so. I think almost all the states have August deadlines for Democratic National Committee officials to notify the state election officials who their official nominee is. So they should be able to get it changed. And even if, you know, if something happens and they miss the deadline, I suspect that states will try to accommodate that either through a waiver of some kind or even if they have to, calling the legislature back into session to change the law. You'll recall that happened about a month and a half ago in Ohio.
Ohio, yeah. And in fact, that kind of surprised me because initially the Ohio legislature, which is predominantly Republican, said, we're not changing deadlines to help you out. And then all of a sudden they changed course for whatever reason. Do you have any insights on that?
Well, in fact, the governor, when he called him back in this special session, he called him in not only to change the deadline, but for a second reason. And the second reason was that he got them to agree to a bill to ban all foreign funding of Ohio elections.
Oh, good. Because
yeah, that was a good development, but I think that was the temptation to get the Republicans to come back and vote for that.
Okay, one of the most common questions I get, and you're the legal talent who can tell this, because Hans von Spakovsky, if you know this or not, read what he writes at Heritage, because he's a legal expert, and a legal expert specifically on elections. But tell me this, people have asked me, well, why is this one going to be any different than 2020? And I said, generically, number one, the Trump campaign, I think, is a little more, you know, lined up and ready to do battle in the courts and quickly bring challenges should there be some shenanigans on November 5 or just before with all the absentee and mail ballots. But secondly, a bunch of states have changed their laws. Now, do I think they've changed them enough? Probably not. But give me your view on that, on how 2024 will be different than 2020 when it comes to the way this election is conducted.
Well, your analysis is right on target. A large number of states actually have improved things since then and have passed all kinds of measures. For example, remember, in 2020, Zuckbucks was a big deal, right? Mark Zuckerberg gave over $400 million, which they then granted to election offices in big urban Democratic strongholds. They basically were using government officials for the get out the vote campaign for the Democrats. Well, 2/3 of the states passed laws prohibiting private funding of election officials. So that is not going to happen again in all kinds of places where it happened before, including, by the way, in Pennsylvania. Philadelphia had gotten a huge amount of money, and that really helped turn out Democratic voters. Pennsylvania is one of the states that passed a law like that. Additionally, remember, big increase in what? Absentee ballots pushed by the left. A number of states, Georgia being one of them, which, as you know, lots of controversy in Georgia last time. Georgia extended its voter ID law, which only covered in-person voting, to absentee ballots. And so far, it has survived all of the attempts in court by the left to knock that provision out.
And by the way, can those attempts be seen as anything but an attempt to skew the election in favor? Because I don't know what kind of argument you use to say, well, you know, you can't have these kind of limitations. Well, why? Because you want your side to win. Well, shouldn't election law changes be relatively, you know, party neutral and say we're going to make a change and it should affect both sides equally? The Democrats always seem to object to the things that get in the way of cheating.
Well, unfortunately, you're exactly right. I mean, the idea that, look, the very idea that people won't be able to comply with ID requirements, ID requirements have been in place now for a decade and a half. And in fact, turnout has gone up in states that have put them in place. So any continued opposition to ID requirements, including for absentee ballots, look, the only possible reason for that is because you want to make it easy to cheat.
I'm talking to Hans von Spakovsky from the Heritage Foundation. By the way, mention for my audience where they can find your massive list. I think, is it more than 1,000 cases where election fraud was committed in one way or another, casting ballots that shouldn't have been cast? Is it past 1,000 or is it to 2,000 yet?
We're past 1,500. 1,500 proven cases. I'm proven. People found guilty in a court of law or a judge ordering a new election because of fraud. They can find it at heritage.org under election integrity, and they'll find our database. They can look up any state. We list all the proven cases in that state.
And you have to remember that some of the cases never get brought. And Hans, I don't think I've told you about this before. In my neck of the woods, in the county I live in Washington State, there was a foreign national woman who admitted to the prosecutor. She said, yes, I'm a foreign national. Yes, I know it's illegal for me to vote. Yes, I have voted. She voted six times. I think it was in the last 4 years. And she admitted to all this. And the prosecutor said, I'm not going to bring any charges.
That is a problem all over the country. I can cite to you literally hundreds of cases that I know of aliens who illegally registered and voted, and not a single one of them was prosecuted.
Well,
if they had, our database would be a heck of a lot bigger.
Right. And so when people tell me, well, we don't hear about any election fraud. And I said, well, even when they catch it, and it's very difficult to catch, because this woman, I don't exactly know how this woman was caught, but when they caught her, they went to her and she said, yeah, I know the law. I know what I'm not allowed to do. I did it anyway. So what? And you say, well, if there aren't any cases, is it because there aren't any people committing election fraud? Or is it because local prosecutors, sometimes Democrat prosecutors, have simply said, we're not going to pursue the cases?
No, and that's the problem. And frankly, it's not just local prosecutors. It is also federal prosecutors. Could I tell you just a quick story?
Sure.
I was on the county election board in Virginia 10 years ago. We discovered, after checking with DMV, almost 300 aliens on our voter rolls. These are people who, when they went to get their driver's license, provided proof they were not U.S. citizens. They got registered anyway. About half of them had voted. We took them off the rolls, and we sent them to the U.S. Justice Department. And we sent them to a guy who worked there named Jack Smith. Does that name sound familiar?
Yeah, it does.
And he ignored them and did nothing about it.
And so if they're not and these should be easy prosecutions, shouldn't they, Hans?
Yeah.
You walk in,
absolutely.
You say, you've been indicted. Your lawyer's here. Here's what we've got on you. And you get a guilty plea, and you at least put the mark on, and you have some consequence. That should be easy, shouldn't it?
It is easy because you've got the voter registration paper, and you've got the documents from the Department of Homeland Security showing they're not a U.S. citizen. I can't think of an easier case for the government to prosecute.
Absolutely right. And get a guilty plea. That's Hans von Spakovsky, who's the senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Hans, it's always a pleasure. We'll be back in a moment. I'm always glad to get your calls. 866-HEY-LARS. Naysayers always go first. Emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Check us out on Instagram and tell Alexa to play the Lars Larson Show.
Informed and always guessing what he'll say next. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network, which has for the last 25 years served the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Do you think that artificial intelligence either wrote or produced last night's Oval Office address by Joe Biden, his swan song, in which he never explained why he's dropping out of the race for re-election, but merely said that he sought to unify the United States of America? Well, you've now got Kamala Harris running for president, and who knows how that's going to go. She has the endorsement of a lot of powerful people. She's raised a lot of money, or she got the money that they were holding back from Joe as one of the ways to push him out of the race. And Barack Obama does not believe that she can win the race, or he doesn't believe that he can keep the puppet strings on Kamala Harris like he's had strings on Joe Biden for the last 3.5 years. So do you think that AI was used to make sure that Joe Biden suddenly loses his stutter and gives a coherent speech for maybe the first time in the last few years. You can find the question on X at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, yesterday, I asked you, should the Secret Service, which failed to protect President Trump, demand that he stop his huge rallies, as they did demand? And I said no, and so did 95% of you. Only 5% of you said yes to that idea, that the Secret Service was right. I mean, talk about a failed agency. To have failed to have protected a presidential candidate and a former president of the United States, and then to turn around and say, you've got to stop having all these big outdoor rallies. You know, now I don't know that Kamala Harris will be having any big outdoor rallies, but you have to wonder whether or not they'll apply the same set of rules to Kamala Harris that they have to Donald Trump. And if they don't, they're going to have to do some explaining. But then again, the woman at the top of the organization has already said she is stepping down from that job. I don't even know if they'll have a new Secret Service director by the time that we get to the election on November the 5th. Now, I want to talk about something that's been going on in both Washington State and in Seattle. Three separate data points. Number one, an attack on five teenage girls that happened on a Seattle Metro bus. You know, for all those transit agencies like Metro in Seattle and TriMet in Portland, if you want to know why people aren't riding the bus more, if you want to know why per capita ridership of transit has gone down dramatically, it's because it is demonstrably dangerous. Now, the police say all this began while the bus was underway. The suspects in this crime were 7 to 17 years of age, and they apparently taunted the victims about their race and privilege. And of course, the mainstream media, like Como News, which is usually happy to tell you about somebody's racial or ethnic background anytime they want to make a point politically or show how woke they are, they don't tell us the racial background of the suspects or the victims in this case, but they do report that the victims were taunted about their race and privilege, and you're just left to guess, well, what was that race and what was the apparent privilege? So these girls got off the bus, five teenage girls. They got off the bus. The suspects followed them. And once they were off the bus, the group surrounded the girls, used foul language, and demanded money. One of the suspects was a seven-year-old brandishing a hatchet. And another suspect was actually carrying a baby. And she was apparently the one that reached around and stole cash from the victim's purses. So consider that crime, ages 7 to 17. And then consider this data point. A motion opposing the closure of King County's youth detention centers moving forward. Reagan Dunn is the council member who's actually saying we should not close the youth detention center. And I agree with him. It comes as the number of violent felonies by kids and teenagers went up 57% in King County just last year. So you've got a gigantic jump in juvenile crime, and the idiots at King County, other than Reagan Dunn, they want to close the youth detention center. Does that make any sense to you? And then ask yourself, if this report from our friend Andy Ngo, who writes at the Post Millennial, does this tell you the state of where things are going right now? Washington State's prison officials have removed Brian Kim, the trans-identifying male sentenced for murder, from the women's prison and transferred Kim back to a men's prison because he's a man after Kim was caught having sex with a real female inmate. Kim went on a hunger strike to protest the move. This marks the first time that the agency has removed a transgender person from so-called gender-affirming housing. Now, on March the 14th, 35-year-old Brian Kim from the Post Millennial was busted having sex with a 25-year-old woman at the Washington Correction Center for Women. Now, this is a problem we brought up on the show before. In most of the states that have identified with this transgender nonsense, they will take actual biological men and put them in a women's prison because the men, in this case, say that they identify as women. And then somehow they're surprised when the inmates end up having sex. You see, if you look at somebody and you say, well, that person is a man pretending to be a woman, so that must be, if he's really pretending to be a woman, he must be sexually attracted to what? To men? No. In many cases, transsexuals who are biological males are still attracted to and would like to have sex with biological women. So you're putting this transgender male in the women's prison, and then you end up with people having sex, and in some cases, being assaulted. And that's going on inside of state prison facilities run by supposedly responsible individuals. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson.
Are you ready for the big show?
In
exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and always glad to get your calls on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I want to talk to, I think, the top candidate running for the 3rd Congressional District in Washington State to represent Southwest Washington in the United States Congress, and that's Joe Kent, retired Special Forces warrant officer and Gold Star husband of fallen senior Navy Chief Shannon Kent. He's also written the book called Send Me, The True Story of a Mother at War. Joe, welcome back.
Hey, Lars, thanks so much for having me back on.
Let's talk about your primary opponent, and that is not the other Republican in the race, and we've talked to her as well, but about Marie Perez, because it seems she's trying to do somewhat the same kind of thing that Kamala Harris is doing right now. She wants to rewrite her history and not remind people of her actual record on the issues.
That's exactly right, Lars. I mean, Marie Perez knows that she's in trouble. She ran as a moderate, but then she's been voting with AOC, Nancy Pelosi, and in lockstep with the Biden agenda. So just today, for example, there was a condemnation put forward by House Republicans of how Kamala Harris has handled the border. Marie Perez and every Democrat initially voted to attempt to kill that condemnation because there's two votes that take place before a bill goes on the floor. It's a vote to actually put the bill forward, and usually the party leaders will dictate how their representatives are supposed to vote. So Perez voted to kill the condemnation, and then once it was out on the floor, her and four other vulnerable Democrats voted for it. But this is part and parcel of what the Democrats are trying to do right now. They know that their policies have absolutely failed the American people, from inflation to the border and the crime and law and order, protection of our kids. They have no issue to run on, and so now they're trying to pin all their failures on Joe Biden and say, hey, look, pay no attention to how we voted and governed for the last couple of years. We've reformed. We're completely different. We're moderates now.
Well, except that even Kamala Harris is going to have a tough time running from her record. Apparently, they're trying to rewrite her history on GovTrack, the supposedly nonpartisan site that tracks the voting records of members of Congress. But she's the one who co-sponsored a bill to make it illegal to deport illegal aliens. And now the bill didn't pass, but she's the one who co-sponsored it. And she has this history of 3 years or so, 3 years and a month or two, of being the border czar. And now literally the legacy mainstream media is trying to say, border czar? There never was a border czar. No, Kamala Harris was not a border czar, even though those very same media outlets actually called her the border czar for much of the last 3 years. So how do they, and how does Marie Glusenkamp Perez, who I assume is going to identify with Kamala Harris as a presidential candidate, how do they run away from the actual record of what they did and what they did not do?
Well, they're really relying on the mainstream media to do all the heavy lifting for them. And so far, as you pointed out, that's what the mainstream media does. Even local mainstream media here in the district, we've got the Oregonian and the Columbian, that they'll say that Marie Perez is a moderate, basically every other word. This is why I encourage people to go to mariewatch.com or go to my website, joekentforcongress.com, and we have her entire voting record laid out there. You don't have to take my word for it. We have the links directly to the House roll call votes, so you can see exactly how she's been voting on all these key issues. This is what I call our Republican superpower. We can actually talk about the issues. We have real ideas to run on, and we have real track records to run on. The Democrats can't talk about their records. They can't talk about their policy recommendations. So everything comes from either a mainstream media talking point, which is basically just propaganda, or just an ad hominem attack where they say that, hey, you know, we're racist, we're bad people, et cetera.
Okay, so on this House resolution that condemns Kamala Harris's failure as border czar, I know there was talk of impeaching her. I don't think that's going to go anywhere, but they got support from six Democrats. Was Perez one of them?
She was one of them, but initially she voted to prevent that bill from going forward onto the floor. And it's kind of funny because the bill to condemn, it doesn't actually do anything. It just condemns. It's just a really kind of a performative act. Marie Perez voted to leave the border wide open. So she really just voted to condemn the exact policy that she voted for.
I mean, wasn't she the same Democrat who said people don't stay up at late at night worrying about people coming across the border illegally? She's the one who said that, wasn't she?
That's exactly right. When she voted in support of Biden's open borders against securing the border, she came back to the district and she said, no one stays awake at night worrying about the southern border. I put the clip up on my Twitter just a couple hours ago. She came back and she mocked us. But now she's seen the polling. She's seen that people are furious about the fentanyl deaths, about the illegal immigration. And so now she's trying to backpedal and she's going to go hold up this condemnation and say, no, look, I condemned Kamala Harris. But really, she's just saying I condemned the policies that I voted for. It's a complete and total scam. So I encourage people to go to MarieWatch.com, share that out with your friends and neighbors. Don't take my word for it. Just take a look at what her voting record is.
Well, and this is kind of a freebie for her, isn't it? Because, Joe, if you're in the Congress and you realize the Republicans are going to pass this resolution anyway, I'm in trouble in my own district, which Perez realizes. She says, I can just throw my name on this thing. It'll be one more vote, but it won't be the deciding vote, so nobody can blame me for making it happen, you know, the way some of us blame the late John McCain for, you know, killing a solution to Obamacare. But she can say, I can cast this vote. I'll get to tell the voters about it and say, this is where I am on this, even though she's been somewhere else the whole time. And she just, basically fooled the voters back at home.
That's exactly right. She's counting us on us not actually reading her voting record. And then she's going to say, yeah, I condemned Kamala Harris. But again, these are the policies that she voted for. She voted for the open border. And now I guess she's condemning it. But also this condemnation, it carries no weight. She voted against securing the border. That actually carried weight. That actually meant something. A condemnation means absolutely nothing at all, especially after you voted for the policy that you are now condemning.
Well, and you mentioned that, you know, she's saying, well, you know, and nobody's worried about this, about somebody illegally crossing the border or the fentanyl that's coming in that is killing 100,000 Americans every year. Not opioids, not the evil Sackler family. No, this is coming in across a wide open border. But on top of that, all the notorious crimes that have risen to even national attention over the last even 12 months, where you have teenage girls raped, you have teenage girls raped and murdered, you have women who are assaulted, adult women who are assaulted. And, you know, so when she dismissed it as, oh, people don't stay up late at night, you know, worried about this. Well, I think they do, because the president and his vice president, now candidate Kamala Harris, have allowed all these people to come in. And when they, it looks like we lost the connection to Joe, but they've allowed all these people to come into our country, and too many of them are criminals. Now, I know that there are people who say, well, Lars, you're saying that all illegal aliens are violent criminals. No, I'm not. Neither did Donald Trump say that. But what I did say is this. Far too often, the people who come into our country illegally and work illegally and identify themselves illegally are not inclined to follow our laws, which means that if they decide they want something, they get it. The teenager, young couple that was killed earlier this week by an illegal alien driving a car unlicensed, uninsured, and with seven times the legal limit of alcohol in his bloodstream, that's what people stay up late at night worried about. And Marie Perez, who has been invited to come on this show, I'd love to be able to ask her about her duplicitous record to vote for an open border and then, when it becomes politically convenient, cast a nothing vote to condemn Kamala Harris so she can claim that she is concerned about this problem. She has dismissed this problem. She doesn't give a damn that Americans are dying of fentanyl. She doesn't give a damn that young people are being killed, are being raped, are being assaulted, and are being killed in drunk driving incidents far too often by the people that Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, and Marie Perez allowed into America. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
If we can. keep meeting like this, people are going to talk. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, shoplifting has skyrocketed in America, and we all know why. Because they defunded the police, because prosecutors stopped prosecuting, because judges stopped sending people to jail. And guess what? Retail stores and their retail customers like you and me end up paying the cost of all that. I want to dig into that topic here in just a moment. But first, I want to grab this call from Steve, who's been waiting way too long. And if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Steve, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, good afternoon. I don't think they were going to use the 25th Amendment on Biden, because they could have still used that and he could have still ran. So they had to go something deeper. I think they were going to impeach him for the bullseye comment. And based on what they had done to Trump, they knew that they would have had enough to convict him on. So,
Hold on a second, Steve, help me out. Help me out with the mechanics of this. So the Democrats want to threaten Biden to get him to drop out. So they don't intend to go through with the 25th, but they're saying, if you don't drop out of the race for reelection, we will invoke the 25th Amendment and have you removed from office. Yes, he could technically still run if the Democrat Party gave him the nomination. Otherwise, he'd be running as a write-in candidate. But how would they go about threatening him with impeachment?
Well, I think that's what keeps him quiet. Because right now, I think they had to go something quick, because this happened within, what, Saturday to Sunday?
Well, I think it's been building for a few weeks, maybe even a few months, that his backers have realized and his own party realizes he's a terrible candidate. He can barely talk and we can't run him in this race, and he needs to back out on his own. They have to get him to do it voluntarily. But again, you haven't told me. How would they threaten him with impeachment? The Democrats are in the minority in the House of Representatives. Oh, Steve dropped off. If he calls back, I'd like to hear the rest of the explanation, because I think the mechanics of it are awkward, and I'll tell you why. Let's say the Democrats want to threaten Joe Biden with the 25th Amendment. What does that take? It takes half the members, one more than half the members of his cabinet. That's nine people. And it takes Vice President Kamala Harris, who gets the prize that she would become President of the United States if they invoked the 25th Amendment. Now, how do you go about threatening him with impeachment? You'd say, well, the Democrats would simply say, we know there are a bunch of Republicans who would like to vote to impeach Joe Biden, although there are no impeachment, there's no impeachment motion or piece of legislation in place right now. So do the Democrats go to the Republicans and say, we'd like you to go public and say that we're going to threaten impeachment, although we don't want impeachment of Joe Biden. They don't want that again. So we want you to merely threaten him so he will drop out of the race. I mean, at the end of the day, I've had so many people call this show, and you're right when you say Joe Biden is a better candidate for Donald Trump to win against. And Kamala Harris is going to bring some things to the race. Age is one of them. She can't exactly talk very well, so she's kind of in Joe's category there. But she's younger. She's female. She's African-American or Asian, whichever one you want to choose these days. Because when she first became vice president, all the headlines were first, Asian-American to become president. And now it's first. She would be the first black female president. So I guess it's just whichever brand of woke you want to subscribe to. But how would they go about publicly threatening Joe with impeachment and saying, we'll go to the Republicans and we'll tell them that we want to impeach you unless you're willing to drop out? And they would ask the Republicans for their help in getting Joe to drop out of a race where, I mean, I can't tell you how many people have called and emailed saying, Lars, you want Joe Biden to stay in place as the candidate because Donald Trump will beat him easily. And I said, I do. On the other hand, I would like Americans to have a functioning president. I don't think we have a functioning president right now. And that's the problem with saying that. Could you get the Republicans to go along with a scheme to try to push Joe out of the race for reelection? They didn't. I think they threatened him with the 25th Amendment. They said, we will invoke it. We will remove you from office. We'll make Kamala Harris president for 6 months. She'll be the candidate for the Democrats. You will be an impeached former president. And if his own party had sold him out that way, I think they sold him out anyway. But this way, they can sell him out behind closed doors. There's going to be an investigation. Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, has already said that they're going to investigate whether or not the party or members of the party went to Joe Biden and threatened him with the 25th Amendment in an effort to get him to drop out. They may well have done it. And if they did do it that way, we should know about it. But that's exactly what I think we're up against. Now, I mentioned shoplifting, not normally something we talk a lot about on this show. But the numbers are absolutely stunning. In the first half of 2024, so the last 6 months, retail rates of shoplifting nationwide have gone up 24%. Now, that information comes from the Council on Criminal Justice Mid-Year Crime Report. The study looked at statistics from 23 cities around the United States, finding that shoplifting has steadily been on the rise since the country began emerging from the pandemic. And I would suggest that if they're saying it's 24%, it's likely far worse than that. And here's why. How often does shoplifting even get reported to the police so they can put in the statistics? I mean, I've been in stores where people just walk out the door with a basket full of stuff. You go to a big box store, somebody loads up a bunch of power tools and just walks out the front door. And what does the store say? The store says, there's nothing we can do about it. We can't stop them physically. The police won't do anything about it. There's rarely an investigation. And in many cases, if they get away with the goods, there's no way for the police to find out who actually did it. Now, what did happen was rates of shoplifting had dropped by about 15% from 2019 to 2020. And that continued down into 2021, mostly, I think, because of the pandemic. But then in 2023, well after the pandemic had both officially and unofficially ended, it climbed through 2023, but it was still below the pre-pandemic levels. Then a spike this year in the last 6 months into 2024, the last 6 months, has gone up 24%, and shoplifting rates are now 10% higher than pre-pandemic levels. And the reason this ought to matter to all of you, and I get very angry at stores that say, well, we're going to impose all this security. We're going to demand a receipt when you walk out the door and all that. I understand why they're doing it, but what they're doing is they are saying to legitimate, lawful customers, we want to see your receipt. If somebody simply walks by and carries goods out the door, only in very rare circumstances does store security try to stop the actual thief. Instead, they're stopping the law-abiding citizen who's not stealing anything while doing nothing about the criminal who's walking out the door. And we all know how this economic equation works. When the criminal steals stuff and takes it out of the store, who ends up paying the bill? Well, you say insurance. The problem is the insurance rates go up too, and the stores pay that. So all of the legitimate customers of the store end up paying for the theft that is being allowed by police, allowed by cities that won't fully fund their police, allowed by store operators who say, we don't want to take the chance of getting sued. We're not going to do anything about it. We're simply going to charge the cost of goods to everybody else who shops there. We are all the victims of that, and the beneficiaries are the thieves. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. He's the best investment in talk radio, and it's free. Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I got to tell you something. This is a little bit inside baseball, but we have guests on the show. I love talking to people. I love talking to callers. But oftentimes, it's tough to even get a guest on the phone. I mean, occasionally these days, even with all the technology. But there's at least one guest who always shows up early, calls in himself, doesn't have a staff member do it, and talks to producer Joel Maha. And he joins us now. And that's Congressman Matt Gaetz from Florida. How are you doing, Congressman?
Oh, it's great to be with you, Lars. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I want to talk about this bill that you just dropped that really could, could have some effect on the election about prohibiting the sentencing and the prosecution of people during a presidential election. But I want to ask you about something else first. You've been one of the people asking questions of FBI Director Chris Wray, correct? Are we getting good answers from that guy?
No, we're not. And I think what showcased Christopher Wray's lack of true transparency was just his participation in the cover-up around Joe Biden's mental condition. This is the FBI director. This is someone who regularly briefs the president about daily threats, what's going on in the country, policy issues. And so I asked Christopher Wray when he started to notice Joe Biden's decline, and he said, gosh, Congressman, I never noticed. He was always sharp as a tack. And yet that's not really honest, and it speaks more of kind of the Washington parlance more than it does a candid reflection on what you've observed. And yeah, how can you trust a guy to run the investigation into the shooter who tried to assassinate President Trump, who couldn't even identify the obvious decline of Joe Biden? I mean, even House Democrats observed it so much that they nudged him out of the presidential contest. Christopher Wray, I don't think we're getting the truth out of him.
No, I don't think so either. And the other odd thing, and it's a small matter, but it was bizarre that apparently he set off a bunch of conspiracy theorists by saying, well, maybe Donald Trump didn't get shot with a bullet. And I saw that, and I thought, what the heck is he talking about? Well, it turns out he's saying, well, it may have been a fragment of a bullet. Well, to have been a fragment of a bullet, there was nothing between Donald Trump and that attempted assassin on the rooftop to have fragmented the bullet. So why he'd throw that kind of thing out there, just I guess for the left to feed on, saying, you see, Donald Trump didn't actually get hit by a bullet. Maybe it was part of a bullet. Maybe it was a ricochet. Maybe it was a fragment of something else. Why in the world would a guy like that throw that kind of thing out there when you know he's talked to his ballistics experts and everything else? You know, those bullets that were fired had a clear path all the way to Donald Trump. Now, after they hit President Trump, the ones that hit people in the crowd might have fragmented at that point, but it was a bizarre thing for him to throw into his testimony, wasn't it?
It was, and do we really care, Lars?
No.
Do we really care if it
no.
was a full bullet or part of a bullet or a third of a bullet? What we know was, a man was giving a speech in a presidential election and ended up bleeding and struck, and the person was clearly attempting to kill Donald Trump, and they in fact did kill Corey Comprator, a patriot who was there defending others, a firefighter who'd served his community, a dad who cared for his loved ones. And so, I think that's pedantic to focus on. The reality is we should be reinforcing that we all oppose political violence. You and I have had this discussion
yep.
frequently. Whenever people use force for their politics, you and I consistently say that is wrong. We say it on
yep.
the right. We say it on the left. It's very consistent. And now the attempt to diminish what we've gone through as a country, seeing a presidential candidate, endure an attempted assassination, I think is most unfortunate.
Well, in fact, over the years, I've had people call up and say, oh, shouldn't that somebody go out and beat that guy up or whatever? And I've always said, no, I'm never. I mean, whether I hate the person's point of view, I hate the person's policy position, but I'm not ever going to suggest violence towards somebody. Although earlier today, Amazon.com was selling a T-shirt that said the only good Trump is a dead Trump. Well, they've pulled it down now, but it was up for several hours. And I thought, there are even companies like that that allow products like that to be displayed in front of folks. Let me ask you about this. The Secret Service apparently came to the Trump campaign and said, look, you got to stop holding these big outdoor rallies. They've been a signature of Donald Trump for the last several years. They're very successful. Is this an agency that just failed to protect the president, President Trump, and then is now saying, and we can't protect you in open air arenas?
There's no reason the Secret Service cannot protect a presidential candidate holding an outdoor event. You establish a perimeter, you secure the perimeter, you do multi-elevation security layers on the ground, on rooftops, in the air with drones, and then you leverage local and state law enforcement to go out and extend that perimeter so that no one's able to even get close and be harmful. And, the shame here, Lars, is that
I've heard the national media criticize Trump supporters and America First supporters as violent, as a danger to democracy, as insurrectionists. And it's always the people there to support the president who are kind and joyful and loving and inclusive. And the people there to do harm are the ones trying to cause division. So I trust the frontline Secret Service folks. I see that they're there with great focus to do their job. This was obviously a systemic failure. I think my colleagues on the Oversight Committee pointed that out. It's a good thing that the director, Kim Cheadle, resigned. And now we've got to do a thorough investigation as to how this ever happened. And by the way, we would be doing this whether the target was Trump or yep. Biden or RFK Jr. or anyone. For all the lectures we've received about attacks on democracy, someone running for president, giving a political speech, being struck by a bullet is the gravest attack on democracy we've experienced.
I'm talking to Congressman Matt Gaetz from Florida. Let me ask you, was Joe Biden threatened by members of his own party this past weekend with the 25th Amendment and the threat to use that in order to push him out? Do you know? And do you believe that's what happened?
I don't know if it was the 25th Amendment. I know that whatever was left of Joe Biden was being slowly fed into a political wood chipper with daily announcements that different prominent Democrats were abandoning his candidacy. And I think Democrats believe that if they just put a different face on the same failed agenda, that will reinvigorate prospects for them. But the reality is Kamala Harris was the tie-breaking vote for the inflationary spending policies of Joe Biden that caused every American to pay higher prices everywhere. And Kamala Harris was appointed the border czar. We've seen that turn into a total debacle, a failure of American leadership, a symbol of American decline. And so I don't know if it was, a continued threat of releases of damning statements about Joe Biden's ability to continue. But the real question we have to ask is, who was in on the conspiracy to hide the real Joe Biden from us? And can we trust any of those people ever again, including Kamala Harris?
I was going to say, we know she was in on. Let me ask you quickly about the Prevention of Election Interference Act. What would this bill do, and what would it tell states about how they're allowed to conduct prosecutions and sentencing prior to an election?
I don't want to see what happened in New York become the new trend where state prosecutors or local prosecutors try to sentence people running for federal office while they are arguing to the voters. The voters should get to decide who represents them. So I would suspend sentencing in matters such as this so that there's not election interference. And by the way, the reason we have to do this, Lars, we've talked about it before. It's the Soros prosecutors all over this country.
Yep.
When they can't win at the ballot box, they're trying to win in the witness box, in the jury box. We shouldn't allow that to happen.
No, we should not. Congressman Matt Gaetz from the great state of Florida, and that new bill dropped today. It would bar the sentencing of presidential candidates in court 120 days before an election, a presidential election, 60 days after a presidential election. I'll be back in a moment. I'll get you your phone calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Hey, Tracy, do we get...
No need to adjust your volume. He's just that loud. Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I think it's going to be a banner year when it comes to elections, and I don't just mean the president, members of the Senate, and the House. I'm talking about state elections. I'm a Washington state voter, and it appears we're going to be able to vote on Initiative 2066. Now, that would roll back part of a law that was meant to basically push away from natural gas. It doesn't actually ban natural gas, although nothing ever happens that way anymore. What they do is they say, we're not going to ban natural gas. We're just going to make it very expensive to put natural gas in a home. We're going to put new building requirements on and effectively economically ban people from using natural gas while still being able to claim that they're not banning it. That's exactly what that law, as the mainstream media called it, to help Puget Sound Energy, the state's largest utility, chart a transition from natural gas. To help them? Because you're effectively saying, we're going to make them do it. It would threaten energy efficiency mandates that would effectively require heat pumps to be installed in lieu of fossil fueled appliances. Now, how do they do that? I'll give you a good example that I think is available to just about anybody. Consider light bulbs. If you hear somebody say, well, they banned incandescent light bulbs. No, they did not. What they did was they said, you can sell any light bulb you want, as long as it produces a minimum amount of light per amount of wattage that's put into it. You say, okay, that's not banning light bulbs. It's just saying the light bulbs have to be very efficient. And then it turns out that the minimum requirements for light bulbs in America, this was a federal measure that pushed this through. Why, when you go to the store, you're not likely to find any incandescent bulbs. You'll only find fairly expensive LED bulbs, even if you would prefer to have an incandescent bulb. And if somebody tells you, well, they banned incandescent bulbs, they didn't. They just said you have to come up with, say, a 60-watt bulb that will produce this amount of lumens, which is impossible to achieve with incandescent light. And it is possible to achieve it with LED lights. So that's how they get away with saying we didn't ban it. We just said, well, if you don't want to put a heat pump in, it's going to be very, very expensive. And they understand that when somebody is building a home and they know they have to sell that home, if the extra costs add up to $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 to put in gas appliances, natural gas appliances, as opposed to electric appliances, they understand if I put this house on the market and every other house is priced $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 less than my house is, people are going to buy the other house. Initiative 2117 is another initiative that I'm glad to see that we're going to get to vote on, to repeal the state's cap and trade system to limit carbon emissions, the Climate Commitment Act that has so far stripped about $2 billion out of the pockets of people who live in Washington State and businesses as well. It has hurt agriculture. It has hurt business. It's hurt individual citizens. And that one was sold as a false bill of goods. They went to the legislature and they said, we want to pass this new carbon cap and trade system. It'll probably cost a couple of $100 million a year. And even still, the state lawmakers said, okay, we'll pass that. It then brought in about six times as much money as they said they expected. Now, do I think they lied? I think they lied through their teeth. I think what they did was they said, if we want this thing to pass, we have to tell state lawmakers it's not going to take much money out of people's pockets. And in fact, we heard the lies from the Inslee administration, who said, eh, it's going to raise gasoline costs maybe a penny or two a gallon. Nobody's even going to notice. We know that it's raised gas costs at least 25 cents a gallon and perhaps more than that. We also know that they promised in that piece of legislation that farmers and agriculture were exempt from the carbon cap and trade system, that they wouldn't have to pay the extra costs, because those costs go right into your food and go right to the grocery store and you end up paying them. So that's another tax that you have to pay, and one that you can't even see. So, as they say, Washington State has not put an outright ban on natural gas, but they say they want to protect the consumer's choice. Well, in this case, consumers should be able to say, if I want a natural gas furnace, I should be able to get one. If I want a natural gas water heater, I should be able to get one. And if you ask Lars, do you have a dog in the fight on this one? Yes, I do. I'm a natural gas customer. I don't own stock in the natural gas companies, but do I have a natural gas furnace? Yep. Water heater? Yep. Stove? Absolutely. Not an oven. The oven is electric. But instead, they're going to force you to take these choices. They really aren't choices anymore. They understand that by using economics, they can force you to do something and at the same time tell the lie that, no, we're not forcing anybody to do anything. Why, if they want to spend a gigantic amount of money, you can keep your natural gas stove. But they understand that most people will not do that. I will point out that all of the political elites, who are usually economic elites too, they have big bank accounts. If they want to have natural gas, they will still have it. They will pay the premium, and it won't be a big deal. but they understand that they're going to shove it down your throat because they know the vast majority of people are not going to be able to afford the extra money. So the elites get what they want. The elites still ride around in big gasoline and diesel-powered SUVs, but the common people, no, that's not going to happen. Our X poll today, do you think that artificial intelligence was used to write or produce Joe Biden's Oval Office address last night? I would answer that one yes, and I think they probably did use those tools. For some reason, Joe Biden had suddenly lost the stutter that he so often has. He was able to give a coherent speech for the first time in 4 years. He did slur a bit, but I'm willing to bet they fixed up some of that video in post, and I'll bet they used AI. You can find the question is brought to you by UltimateTruckServices.com. That's UltimateTruckServices.com, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson.